Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Just a reminder that you can tune in every week live at LA Talk Radio, or you can also find us on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job and subscribe for free weekly. So today, we have a wonderful guest here who was referred to me by an associate of mine. Her name is Pearl Hilliard, and Pearl actually has a very interesting background. So first, thank you, Pearl, for joining us on the show today.
Pleasure.
And I realize I should be calling you Dr. Pearl Hilliard, correct?
Yes.
So Pearl is actually the founder of Hilliard Performance Solutions, a company that provides consulting, coaching, leadership development, and training services. Pearl's an independent consultant and coach who focuses on performance solutions and results using appreciative inquiry strategies. Her passion is employee engagement with an emphasis on strengths-based approaches, and her clients include individuals and small to medium-sized businesses in various functional areas, as well as UCLA, USC, and various other nonprofits. Pearl experienced her own career transition in 2011, and since then has developed career and life transition courses and focuses on career development and transitions for people moving into their second or third act careers. She delights in supporting her clients as they move into a new field, a different organization, or a new phase of life. Pearl has extensive experience implementing and directing a variety of programs that facilitate the improvement and optimization of performance. She has a successful track record in strategic organizational development, leadership development, learning, talent management, and coaching. She provides executive, career management, and life transition coaching, and specializes in developing and facilitating workshops and retreats, which we'll tell you a little bit about. I know there's a webinar series coming up in August that we'll want to tell you about. And Pearl actually received her doctoral degree in human performance at work from the University of Southern California. She also, in case you're not feeling intelligent enough, received an MS in counseling from California State at Northridge and a BA in applied psychology from the University of Witwatersrand? How do I say that?
Witwatersrand.
Yeah, I had a feeling I was not pronouncing that right. From Johannesburg, South Africa, and a BA in business studies from Manchester Polytechnic in England. Her training certifications include Achieve Global, Coaching ACC, BCC, and CPC, Connecting with Others, DISC Training, Emotional Intelligence, Five Behaviors of Cohesive Team, as well as Myers-Briggs Training. So, wow, that is a mouthful. I mean, that bio in and of itself, I think, says it all, right?
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Pearl. And today's show, for those of you who are just tuning in, is a very interesting show where we're going to be talking about that next act of your career. What Pearl really specializes in is helping people make that transition. Many of us know that experience of a midlife crisis. For some people, it happens at 35, and other people, it happens at 45 or 55. The point isn't how old you are or what it looks like. It's how do you move through it? And so what Pearl and I are going to talk about today are some different resources, how you move through it, how do you even begin to identify what your next act or the next phase of your career is going to look like. And then from there, Pearl has just some phenomenal resources. We were chatting before the show, and one of the things we were talking about is there was a website, I think you told me, pivotalplanet.com, that you just found.
Yeah.
I love that concept. I was just asked at a speaking engagement last week by a recent college graduate who said, well, Ms. Hill, how do I even figure out, you know, what sort of career I want? And what I love about this resource that you listed is Pivotal Planet. Will you tell them? I think you looked it up.
Right. It's pivotplanet.com. And what it is, it's they've got a pile of people who are experts in whatever field they love, and you pay $50 an hour to speak to that person. So it really gives you the opportunity to ask them whatever questions you want and to find out, is this a career I really want? Because obviously you can ask them the bad things as well as the good things. And so it's a great opportunity for you to do that.
That is such a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
So before we get into how somebody can make a transition, let's talk about how you got to your transition. You've lived around the world, it sounds like. How did you become an expert in the field of behavior and of human capital?
Well, I've been, for most of my career, I just sort of landed the job. I actually started off as a marketer and didn't particularly enjoy that. So then I got into a training position where I was training to be a retail store manager. So that was part of the training. And then I was made the HR manager of the store. And so that's really where it started from. And since then, and you know, that's a few years ago, I've really been in that field all the time. I started off sort of on the personnel, the HR side, but I found that was too much like the recruiting or the compliance. That didn't turn me on as much as the training side and the development side, because I used to get really excited when I could help people move to the next level. When I see that aha, you know, when you've explained something to them or help them train something, you know, learn something new, it's like, oh, wow, this is fabulous. So I got a real kick out of that. So ever since then, I've been in this field and sort of moving through the different organizations. It's going from being purely a trainer to then becoming a consultant. And I was working at USC, that's my last position, and I was a consultant there, an associate director of professional development. So we did consulting with a lot of departments there, with staff, sometimes with faculty. And you're also looking from an organizational development perspective, what can you do to help the organization get to a better level? What can you do to help in terms of processes, work processes that perhaps are not particularly effective or efficient? You know, so how can you make it better? So I just love sort of solving those problems and making things better and helping people to get to where they want to get to the next level.
Wow, it's quite an interesting path that you've taken. And it's amazing because you never know that one job. Like you said, you started off in retail.
Right,
and then
right.
Lo and behold, you know, you became a human resources manager.
Right,
What I would like to acknowledge you for that I think a lot of our listeners need to hear is that what was great is you realized what wasn't meant for you.
Yes.
That's
yes,
so important.
It
so
is.
Was it a challenge for you, speaking of career transitions, to not go down the path that was the easy path for you to take? How hard was it for you to transition from a traditional HR manager role into more of a training and development role?
Well, in all of the HR manager positions I had, then training and development was part of it. And I always preferred that side of it. And I was actually an HR manager for a particular department at USC. And it was like, you know, I just don't like this half of my job. I don't like it. In fact, it was probably more than half. And so what am I going to do? And then this other opportunity came up. So it's like, yes, I'm going to take it. I'll work in the professional development department. So since then, working 100% in the field that I really enjoy, it's just, you know, a whole world opened up.
Yeah, that's great. Realizing it's not what you're meant to do and then figuring out how to get access to doing what you want to be doing full time.
Yes.
And so talk to me about your doctoral degree in human performance at work. I didn't even know there was such a degree. I would love to know how you got inspired to go after that sort of...
Well, I was working at USC and you get tuition remission, and one of my colleagues was taking the degree. I hadn't heard about it. And he says, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm starting in 3 months or whatever, and there's an informational meeting. So do you want to come? So I went to the informational meeting and it just sounded fabulous. And so I decided to do it. And, you know, it's been great. I learned so much. They had speakers coming in from New York or, you know, whatever to do a particular program. It would only last a month. Each course was only like a month because it was intense. And it was great. I learned so much. I met some people, wonderful people in my cohort and some great professors. So it really opened up a lot for me. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. And it's great that you went after a passion.
Yes.
And
yes.
So when somebody is looking at making a career transition, what is the first step that you as the consultant take with that individual if they're at a crux, if they're at a crossroads in their career and, you know, perhaps it's a midlife crisis, perhaps they've been laid off? What is the first step that you would recommend to one of those individuals?
I think to realize that you're not the only person going through this. That a lot of people, and whatever it is, whether the loss is a job loss or you had a personal loss or there's a health issue, an empty nest, you know, whatever it is that suddenly you think, oh, I'm not satisfied with my current position, my current job. It's really you figuring out. Obviously, there's some dissatisfaction there. So going into greater detail, what is it that you're dissatisfied with? So, it's as we said earlier, it's as important to know what you don't want as much as what you do want. So what is it about your current job? Is it your boss? Is it the actual work itself? Is it the company? You know, what is it? But there's obviously some dissatisfaction going on. So trying to figure that out, because that will help you in terms of, you know, where I don't want this, so where do I want to go? So maybe you've got some yearning in terms of I'm not doing this, I feel I'm not contributing enough, or I'm not getting enough satisfaction in some way because I want to perhaps give back more, and this is sort of too focused on profits. You know, whatever it is that you want to make that change, it's really sort of knowing what it is. Why do you think you want to make the change? And so what are the things that you really want to focus on? And, you know, and also being aware of what you don't want to be doing. So it's really a lot of self-reflection. So you're feeling that dissatisfaction. And yeah, so it's whatever age you are. You can be at 28 or whatever and you still feel that there's something going on here. So what is it? You know, what is it about you? So where do you want to go? What is your dream job? What are your strengths? It's really a sort of a process of getting to know you, getting to know yourself. I mean, some people, we know ourselves better than others. So it's sort of going through that process of, okay, these are my strengths. These are the things that in my current position that really turn me on. I love this. And perhaps that's the piece that I want to take with me and make it a full-time job. You know, so what is it that I want to be doing, or what do I think I want to be doing? Because a career coach is going to help you look at those issues and perhaps help you find the path that you want to go in. Because today, back in the old days, if you're a woman, you became a secretary or a nurse or a teacher. Now, there were three careers. But now it's like, doesn't matter what gender you are, it doesn't matter what age you are, but it's like there's a
million
thousand
choices.
Yeah, it's like crazy. So if you're just wanting a change, it makes it more difficult if you're not quite sure, but you've just got to go through the process of, you know, what is it that I like, what is it that I want to be doing, and try and sort of hone in more and more so you sort of have a path that you want to go on. And oftentimes, clients they're not sure. You know, I know I don't want to be doing this, but I'm not sure. And there are maybe three different sort of paths I want to go on. So how do I choose? And one of the things you need to be doing then is going out, networking, talking to people. And that's when you might use this pivotplanet.com, because you think you want to become an IT manager or whatever it happens to be. So maybe you'll talk to one. You can do that through your networking or something like Pivot Planet, or even try and do some volunteer work in that field. So lots of areas where you can figure out, yeah, is this really what I want or isn't it? Before you give up your day job, before I make that leap, and I want to be a little bit more sure of where I want to go to, and these are some of the things you can be doing. Maybe doing some training in that field, volunteering, you know.
Education.
Right, the courses. I've got a couple of resources in terms of volunteering.
I would love it. Yeah, please.
The Taproot Foundation. So that's www.taprootfoundation.org. And www.volunteermatch.org.
I love Volunteer Match. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so both of those, and they want to use your professional skills. So whether you're into web design or whether you're in the accounting or whether you're in training, whatever it happens to be, they will find an organization. They're generally nonprofit organizations. They need somebody with your expertise. So it's a great way of giving back to the community, using your expertise, getting it on your resume or certainly on your calendar, and also meeting other people through it. And you never know that the person you're doing the volunteer work knows the director at this organization, and they might be looking for somebody and they might refer you. So, you know, you never know where the path is going to lead.
And it's a good way too, I have to emphasize this, to keep your skills fresh. When we saw the economy crash in 2008, 9, and 10, we saw so many people, especially in the real estate market, who were displaced. And there was one individual in particular who I remember, who was this very professional, put-together individual, and she volunteered as an administrative professional at a nonprofit for the 2 to 3 years while she was out of work. And the moment a real legitimate job came up in her industry, instead of passing on her, she had great longevity in the past, they loved and gravitated towards the fact that she had this wonderful administrative experience that was exactly what they needed for that job.
Right.
I think that's very valuable. And even for me, years ago, I was chairperson of the American Wine Society in LA, and I thought for a little bit about going into the food and beverage industry. And if you're looking to change careers, even if it's volunteer experience, what I've noticed, or what I'll recommend to job seekers, is it's perfectly acceptable to list out and break apart and have at the top of your resume volunteer experience, and then below that, work experience. And that way you can show an employer, hey, I do have relevant experience. So in my case, I had never actually, you know, been paid to work at a wine store, but I had 7 years of experience running a nonprofit for the Wine Society.
Great.
And I realized I like to drink wine, but I did not want to work in that industry, which is also why it's good to volunteer, because you might work. A friend of mine was just telling you this the other day, is that she's close to retirement. Mm-hmm. And she thought to herself, gosh, Jennifer, well, I love helping animals and it's something I'm really passionate about. But when I actually took the time to go and volunteer at an animal shelter, it broke my heart and it really broke me down.
Right.
And so sometimes it's the grass is always greener and you think something is more glamorous or will make you happier than it will.
Right, exactly. It's like those boyfriends. What you learn from each boyfriend is what you don't want. It's the least that you learned. You might have learned a lot of good stuff too, but when you move on, it's like, that's not what I want actually.
Yeah, I remember I had a therapist after I broke up with an ex-boyfriend 10, 11 years ago before I met my husband, and he said, if you meet a rich, powerful, tall, dark, handsome man, run. Run for the hills. But the same could be true for us in a career situation, is sometimes you need a coach or somebody to help reflect. In that case, I needed a therapist to tell me that's not good for me and that's not going to bring me lasting fulfillment, which is how I was able to meet and date and fall in love with my husband, as I went for somebody who was the opposite. And that's the thing with jobs too, is I find so many people think money will solve all their problems,
right.
or a glamorous job will solve all their problems. And really, it just begets more unhappiness because they're basing it not on something that the spirit or that's good for them as a human being, but what their ego thinks will look good on paper.
Right. Yeah.
Do you notice that happens a lot? Like, what percentage of people who are in transition do you think actually make a transition into something that brings them lasting happiness versus transitions into something like in LA, quite honestly, entertainment? I hear it all the time. I moved to LA because I wanted to get in the entertainment industry because it's the sexy thing to do.
Right.
Do you see
that
being an obstacle for your clients?
And there's been some research that was done fairly recently looking at people 40 to 59, and like a third of them wanted to make a change in the next 5 years. Another third had already made a change, and 50% of people wanted more money or felt that money was an issue. But when they were asked, you know, what's their dream job and what did you really want, most people, apart from they wanting the sort of reasonable amount of money, but they were willing to compromise on that if they got more work-life balance, if they felt that they were contributing more, because that's really important. It seems as people get older that they really want to do that, you know, so those things are important, that they perhaps have more opportunity to travel, and that work-life balance is really, really vital, and especially for the millennials, you know, so companies need to be more cognizant of that, when they're sort of organizing how work is done in their organizations.
It's interesting. You just touched on a point when we're talking about career transitions that I heard, I think it was last year, I was at a conference, somebody brought up that there was a millennial who was given a chance for, I forget if it was every month or every 3 months, to have a different job over the course of 2 years. And when they asked this millennial what his favorite job was, he didn't say it was a job. He said it was the place, any of the places where I felt like I was a part of a team is where I felt the most happy.
Right.
And it's interesting that you're saying even for people who are at a career transition, you know, in a totally different generation sometimes, that for them, the same thing. It's like that sense of belonging and happiness and having the balance.
Yeah. And people want to feel that they're making a difference. So if you don't feel valued or respected at work, then even though you might sort of enjoy the kind of work you're doing, if you're not getting that recognition or just, hey, you're doing a great job, or you feel that you're contributing somehow, then your motivation is going to, you know,
decline. Something else I think you and I had initially talked about that fascinated me is you said when a lot of people are getting into Act 2 or Act 3 of their career, sometimes they pursue teaching of some sort or another in a different profession. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
A lot of people do that, but this is more like when you're pre-retired, so it might be kind of older people, like maybe 55 onwards. But often they feel that they've made their money, they've done what they wanted to do, but they really want to give back, and they feel that giving back to the upcoming generation is where they can have the most impact. So people then want to get into teaching.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is there a way that you would recommend for any of our listeners out there? Maybe somebody is in their 50s or whatever age they might be, and they feel like they've hit a certain level of expertise in their field. What would be a way? Of course, there's volunteering like we spoke about, mm-hmm. but are there any other resources or suggestions you have of getting your foot in the door in a way to mentor or teach other people?
Well, if you're talking about teaching adults, then that's different, because if you're talking about teaching school children, then you have to get the qualifications to be able to do that. But if you're talking about going into training, and that's something that people do, that you can do, that you've been an expert, maybe you've been working 20, 25 years in a particular profession, then you're perhaps an expert in that profession. So now can you rather start training people in that profession or become a coach for people in that profession? So then you'd have to look and see what the viability of that is within the particular industry.
Interesting. Yeah. And how important is social media to your clients who are in career transition? Is that something that you would recommend people who are transitioning should be leveraging?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I know that you're having Maria Barraquette in next month, and she's a social media guru. So, I mean, you'll really enjoy having her. But so I'll only touch on it because she'll go into a lot more detail. But it's vital. If you're not on LinkedIn, then, you don't exist.
So true.
And, for professionals, Facebook is fine for personal, but LinkedIn is absolutely vital if you're sort of wanting to make it there sort of professionally, get your name out there. Because a lot of people in transition, they might have a feeling of this dissatisfaction, but they're not sure what it is, and it might take them a while to sort of figure it out and then leave their current position if that's what they're going to be doing, maybe even leave their profession to try something totally different. Meanwhile, even if you're not thinking of moving right now, you should still be setting yourself up for success by making sure you do have an updated LinkedIn profile, that you have got all those connections that you want to have, that you are making yourself known, that you are in groups for the particular sort of work that you're in, and making comments and contributing to those groups so that people sort of get to know you. So social media is absolutely essential.
Is there ever a time you would tell one of your clients not to transition?
I wouldn't tell somebody not to transition, but
or discourage.
you'd be asking them, why they're wanting to do this. I did have a case of one of my clients, and he was working for a large organization, and he was feeling some sort of dissatisfaction, and he was, came to me because he wanted to move, and then we were talking about it, and it turned out that because he liked where he worked, he liked the people. He liked a fair amount of the work, and the work itself, there were great benefits too, but he felt there was something missing in terms of the creativity piece. Mm. So, we were talking about, okay, so what does he want to do? What does he want to go into? And then his son had a bar mitzvah, and he did all the photography for it, and set up the PowerPoint and the video and all that, and he just loved that piece so much that he realized that he really liked his job.
Ah.
The creativity wasn't being satisfied at his job, but he could satisfy that outside. So then he took up photography, and whenever he goes anywhere, he takes photographs and makes books of his photographs. So yeah, so there is that. So that's like there's no movement because he had a different perception about what his needs were, which needs were being satisfied at work, and which needs he could satisfy outside of work. And of course, at work, whenever there was anything that was sort of creative, any initiative that he heard about or project, he would volunteer
contribute.
For that. Hey, I want to head this one up, kind of a thing. So yeah. So then he felt then more settled in his work, so he was happy with that.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because for me, I love cooking. It's one of my favorite things. But
if you
actually told me to become a professional chef, I would cry, because you see how hard these chefs work, and it's hard enough just to make a dinner party for six people, and the amount of pressure, that's something else that you have to consider, is the grass really greener?
Right, yeah, the pressure and the work hours. If you're working 9-to-5 job and you go into something like a restaurant, It's totally different. You're weekends and nights. Yeah.
Catering, so, same thing, and events.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And one thing that might help our listeners that a mentor of mine taught me years ago is he said, whenever a job seeker is looking to make a move, you want to ask three questions. Do you like your boss? Do you like the work you're doing? And do you like the company? And our personal recruiting philosophy at J. Hill Staffing Services, my legal recruiting company, is if we ask a job seeker those three questions and the answer to all three is yes, we actually will not work with you. Mm-hmm. Unless there's an extenuating circumstance, in very rare occasions, somebody doesn't get benefits or they're commuting, 4 hours a day.
Right,
unless it's one of those very rare circumstances, yeah. I don't want to pull somebody out of a job who's already gainfully, happily employed, likes their bosses, likes their colleagues, because you're better off than 90% of the general public.
Right, definitely.
Have you read any research on what percentage of people are actually satisfied with their jobs?
Not satisfied, and satisfaction is slightly different than engagement. I'm really sort of focusing on, I look at my research on engagement, and that's, satisfaction and engagement are obviously very closely related. But if you look at any of the Gallup information, the research that they do, and they do extensive research on employee engagement, only about a third of, and this is in America, but it's not just in America, it's throughout the world, but generally a third of employees are actively engaged, or fully engaged at work. So that's a shame. That means that two-thirds of people are not engaged, and out of that two-thirds, then there is a certain percentage, I can't remember the percentage, maybe as much as 20% who are actively disengaged.
Actively disengaged. So please enlighten us. What does that mean?
Well, basically, you hate what you're doing.
Oh, no, that breaks my heart.
You hate going into work. And that's where a lot of people start making issues at work, because they're not happy. They might be those complainers and the
cantankerous.
And they try and get the other people on their side, and it's a horrible organization and all that.
It's all political.
And it's because they're really dissatisfied for whatever reason with their current position. It could be that the manager's not a great manager, and so they don't feel empowered, and they're given the crappy work that they don't like to do. They're not using their strengths. It's really important that you're using your strengths every day at work. That's one of the prime questions that Gallup uses. Are you able to use your strengths every day to do what you do best every day at work? And so it's vital that we do that, because that feeds us, that nurtures us, and if we can't do that, then no wonder you feel cantankerous,
Yeah, we see a lot of that in the workplace, and there's a great meditative, I forget who had said it, but your outer is a reflection of your inner, basically. Mm-hmm. And so if inside you're feeling discontent, upset, frustrated, then of course you're going to look for that outside of you, because if you see a thing as good, it becomes good, but if you see a thing as bad, it also becomes bad. So if you look for all that's wrong in your workplace, yes, you're going to be more inclined to find it.
So
perhaps for anybody looking to transition out there, yes, there may be things that you could be dissatisfied with if you're one of the disengaged people, but if you shift your perspective even slightly and look for anything to be grateful or appreciative of in your current situation, you might actually surprise yourself and at least find enough contentment to get you through until you're ready to re-engage somewhere else.
Right, and as you say, those three questions you had, which were great, that it might be your boss, that maybe there's a new manager come in and you and he or she just don't gel, and so even though you might have enjoyed your job before, so maybe there's something you can do. Maybe you can do a lateral move in the organization to a new supervisor. If it's the work itself, that's a little bit more difficult, but still there are things you can do. It's like, what pieces of the work do you enjoy? And to try and augment those pieces, to recraft your work, speak to your manager. Is there something I can do that, because I know that you've got this initiative coming up and I really like that. Can I sort of focus on that for the next couple of months? So you're really trying to help yourself in terms of the work. If you don't like the organization, then again, that's something that you probably would need to leave. Maybe the values.
The culture might not be the right fit.
Exactly. And then you have to be looking around. Yeah.
And what's interesting that I just realized is we had somebody who was in a similar position. One of the things that I would encourage to any of our listeners, say you're mildly unhappy and there's something missing, like for example, at the creative gentleman you mentioned you worked with, the most important thing that our listeners should realize about that situation, talk to your boss.
Yes.
If you're somebody who's well-regarded, who they want to keep, mm-hmm. people never think this. People will tell me all the time, oh, Jennifer, there's nothing they can do to keep me. But the minute your boss gets wind of the fact that you're leaving, say there was a part of your work that wasn't stimulating enough or the lack of creativity,
nine times
out of ten, if you're dealing with a team player, somebody who's bright and diligent, shows up and does a great job, they will find a place for you if it's a large enough organization, even if it means moving departments, which sometimes can be the easiest way to make a career transition.
Yes, for sure. And speaking to your manager, you should be doing that right at the beginning, is like, I'm a little bit bored with this. Is there something else I can be doing? Or, you know, just to try and be able to focus on the things that you enjoy doing and to be using your strengths perhaps more than you are right now. And the manager is the first person you should be speaking to about that.
Yeah, and something else too that perhaps might be a good inquiry to get into if you're looking at making a career transition is to ask people in your personal and professional life, what can you count on me for and what can't you count on me for? Mm. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative conversation. It could just be like, what are the things that you're naturally gifted at? What are the things that other people count on you for? Is it helping set up the baby shower maybe for the office?
Or is
it writing the memo? You know, there are all these hidden treasures and gifts that we might have that when we're in the inquiry and the exploration of what our ideal job looks like, that's an important question to ask the people around you, because somebody might give you a pearl of, you know, wisdom of this thing that you're just excellent at that was in your blind spot and you didn't even realize it was an area that you were successful in.
Right. If you, a similar question that I have my clients ask or think about is, what are you the go-to person for?
Oh, great. You know? I love
that. So what is it that they want you to do the baby shower, or they want you to organize this, or they want you to do or whatever it is? And that's probably one of your great gifts. Because if everybody, both at home and at work, wants you to do this kind of stuff, it means that you're great at that kind of stuff. And, you know, they can rely on you to do a good job. And so, you know, on a team, they rely on Jennifer to do this, but they rely on Pearl to do that. So that's one of my, you know, talents.
We all have our strengths. I'm so lucky. One of the girls in my office, Kristen, she brings a very special gift. She's so detailed and meticulous. So anytime I send out a new handbook, et cetera, she'll go back and reformat it so the pages line up. And it's just great because she knows that that's her gift is she's really good at handling that stuff, which makes my brain hurt. So we all have our things that we know we're good at or could be better at.
I
would love to know, can you tell us a little bit more about your research on engagement or what you found from any?
Well, it's absolutely fascinating that so few people are engaged. And it hasn't changed much over the last, 10, 20 years. So it's still similar. So it's why, especially now that over the last 10 years, people have been saying, hey, let's focus on strengths. And I don't know. Companies don't seem to be doing what needs to be done. Individuals aren't talking to their manager and saying, hey, I'm great at this. How can I use this in my, you know, stretch me, challenge me, give me something so that I can use this strength. But companies that Gallup have worked for, they've put in the culture change, or they're having managers behave differently with their employees, and that's helped to improve engagement. You know, that they're making an impact, you're speaking to them and giving them regular feedback, that you're taking an interest in them, that people feel they're part of the team, that they feel included. All those things are so important, you know, that they're making an impact, they're making a contribution. I don't want to think that if I don't go into work tomorrow for whatever reason, that nobody's going to miss me. It's like, what's that all about, you know? So employees want to feel, I'm important, and they want to have an alignment with what they're doing, with the organizational objectives too. So this is what my organization does, and this is how I help to do that. Some of the research and I thought this was really fascinating, is your job, is your work a job, a career, or a calling?
Oh, wow.
And a job is just like, it's just, you know, I'm just
something
doing,
that gives you a paycheck.
Right. A career, you're sort of taking more interest and perhaps you want
ownership.
Promotions. Right. But a calling is what you do. Even if you won the lottery tomorrow, you'd still do it. And, you know, the sort of the joke is that somebody was sort of laying bricks over there, and they asked the one person, so what are you doing? I'm laying bricks. And then they went along to one of the other guys, what are you doing? I'm building a cathedral.
Wow.
And it's
just the difference in perspective.
You know, totally different in perspective. And they've done research and shown in hospitals that cleaners who feel that their job is important, because if I don't do a good job here, you know, there might be a problem with germs or whatever. I want to make sure that the patient is happy. And the cleaners who will actually straighten the picture, even though the person might be in a coma, they straighten the picture on the wall. They are so much happier and satisfied and engaged at work than the ones who see it, I'm just sweeping the floor.
Oh, my gosh.
So it really is a perspective, two people doing the same thing, but just coming at it from totally different points of view.
Two different angles. Yeah, it goes back to perspective. It's all about how we perceive something. If you perceive it, you know, as this amazing thing that's going to bring you happiness and that you get to contribute, it's the, like the example you just gave of the person who's correcting a mishung photograph on a wall. They're generating their contribution as opposed to just reacting and going, oh, well, nobody's going to appreciate me. And so it really takes a certain level of self-awareness and generating contribution as opposed to, you know, just being there and just doing the work.
So being more proactive than reactive.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. That's so interesting. I love that.
Yeah.
So we've covered a lot of this stuff on transitions. First, you have to kind of figure out what you're passionate about. Then you have to get out there and network and perhaps leverage your social network a little bit. Mm-hmm. Tell me, what is the average transition time? How much of a nest egg does somebody need? If you're, say, hypothetically 40 or 50, you know, how much time, or does it just completely vary in each circumstance? What's the average time?
There isn't an average. So it really depends totally on your circumstances. You know, if you're single and don't have any commitments versus if you've got a family and maybe even taking care of parents too, you know, so it's very different. But some people are already sort of reasonably well off, so they can still take a year off if they need to take a year off, whereas others can't. So they've got to make sure, you know, that they know where they're going before they make that leap.
All right, we have a caller calling in. Let's see. Thank you so much for calling in. Who's on the line? Hello, thank you so much for calling Get Yourself the Job. May I ask who's calling?
I'm sorry, this is a terrible connection. Let me call back. Thank you.
No problem. That's what you got to love cell phones. You can call from anywhere and you can also get disconnected from anywhere. The joys of cell phones in the 21st century.
Right.
But
right.
Going back to what you were saying, what's really interesting is it's different for every person, but I would imagine, so before somebody just kind of ups and leaves their job and decides, I'm going to throw in the towel, I don't like my boss, he or she is a jerk, and this is not the career for me, I would imagine, are there any sort of like toolkits, like you would recommend people for, say, if you are somebody who's single and doesn't have anything planned, what are the first steps you need to do to get yourself prepared to transition? Is there anything you would recommend with respect to that?
It's really just what we were saying before in terms of, okay, knowing yourself and knowing what you want to do or where you want to go. Because if you have that, then you know I can take a year off, or I need to volunteer weekends and evenings. Because the even if you don't like your job, it can be giving you that financial stability. And often they say that if you go for an interview and you're unemployed, that you're looked down on as opposed to if you already got a job. So it's good that you got a job even though it's one you don't like. So you've got to take those kinds of things into consideration.
Yeah, so I'll give our listeners the phone number in case anybody wants to call in the last 10 minutes of the show and ask myself or Pearl any questions. So the phone number to call into is 323-203-0815. And I'm talking here with Pearl Hilliard, who's an expert in the field of career transitions. And one thing that I'd like to throw out to our listeners is a possibility. I talk about it in my book, Stop Hoping, Start Hunting, A Job Seeker's Guide to Finding a Dream Job. In one of the very first chapters, I say the most important thing, no matter what type of job search you're engaging in, whether you're transitioning careers or just looking for a better opportunity in your industry, is a wish list, is kind of creating a wish list of what it is that you enjoy, what it is that brings you fulfillment.
Right.
And so one of the things you could do is you could make a list of 20 things. And you don't even, the great part about this, you don't even need to to know the title of what it is that you want to be called, because sometimes when you're transitioning into a new career, you might not even know what that job's going to be called. Putting the pen to paper and putting, you know, making $50,000 or more within 5 miles of your house with XYZ benefits, spending 20% or more of your day engaging with people, if that's something that makes you happy, and another 30% of your day or more engaging in creativity or different things that would make you passionate and bring you fulfillment, you make this whole wish list, and then you give a percentage to each one of those items so that the total of those items adds up to 100%, and then you have that hard conversation with yourself, and you say, what percentage of this do I need in order to transition into something else? And you use that as kind of your barometer before you make a jump or before you do anything. That way you can reflect back and from a non-emotional place, look at, does this meet what I'm looking for?
That's great. Great idea. Wonderful idea.
Another thing, too, that I would recommend to a lot of people is sometimes just the even getting yourself out there and beginning to look at doing something new can be confrontational for people. And we have to deal with our internal self-dialogue of, I don't trust myself. I'm going to screw this up. I'm going to disappoint somebody. I'm not good enough to do this. So one of the ways that I've personally found to battle that internal dialogue is create a statement of intent and a daily declaration. By December 31st, 2016, I have a position in a creative industry that I've never worked in before, paying me $50,000 or more a year within 5 miles of my house. And you declare it out loud every day. And any person, I kid you not, who has actually done the statement of intent and daily declaration has landed that job by the exact day they've said it. But be specific. Listen to the people around you, because most people will say, oh, I need a job. I need a paycheck. I need something different.
Right.
And the people who say that get exactly what they ask for. They get something different, a job, you know, whatever it looks like. But the people who are specific and you create a by when date, the minute you put specificity into the equation, everything transforms and exactly what you ask for shows up. It's like that old adage, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, well, it's a great adage in this case. Yeah. I love it.
So I just throw that out there to you.
Yeah,
so anything else as far as, I know we're down to about the last 10 minutes of the show now. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners that you think would help them with making that transition if they're in the inquiry of it?
I think you've just got to sit down and decide, you know, what is it about this job that I love? What don't I like? What is my dream job? And, you know, what do I need to do to go out and find that dream job? Some people be able to, as we said, stop work right away, but others, they might have to continue with their current job, and that's fine. So it's like, okay, so am I going to be networking? Am I going to be shadowing somebody? So how am I going to find out more information to know exactly what position I want?
And I think people are not adverse to informational interviews.
No,
I get calls all the time.
Right,
and so call up somebody who's well-regarded in their industry.
Right.
And, you know, just be respectful of that person's time.
Yes.
And so
yes.
If you are going to have an over-the-phone conversation or a coffee with them, make sure that you're very intentional in the questions that you ask so that their time isn't quote-unquote wasted.
Right.
But I have no problem doing informational interviews because recruiting isn't for everybody. I love my job, but I will sit down and tell somebody the good, the bad, and the ugly about it.
Yeah.
So I think it's about being fearless and reaching out and just inquiring and asking people in 10 or 20 different fields that you think you might be interested in and asking them about their day-to-day.
Yes. It's a way of making contacts. And the thing with networking is that you're asking them for referrals too, so that they would perhaps be referring you to somebody else so that you can speak to them as well.
It's all about your network and leveraging it. And just keep in mind for any of our listeners out there, when you do network, be careful not to make it all about you. That is the only time I see it really harm people when they're looking either to get a new job or career transition, whatever that looks like. If you go to a networking event, my favorite story is when I first opened my company 7 years ago, it was awful, Pearl, I have to tell you. I had 100 business cards in each of my pockets that were freshly printed, and you could see the wave of people move as I walked through, walking, oh, hi, Jennifer Hill, nice to meet you. Hi, Jennifer Hill, do you want to hire me? Hi. And people were just like dropping like flies around me. And it's because I was just trying to push myself on other people as opposed to engaging in dialogue, finding out what other people are passionate about.
Yes.
So again, we could do an entire podcast just on networking, which we will have to do at some point.
Yeah.
And it's just important to realize that networking is a two-way street and offer resources for the people who you're meeting with.
Right.
And then be sure to follow up. That's another important thing.
Yes, building the relationship, that's vital. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I would love to tell our listeners about your upcoming webinar. I think it's Reinventing Your Career After 40. Is it webinars, www.webinars.yournextstepcareers.com, I believe, right?
Yes. I'm not sure if it's up yet, but if not today, then it should be up by tomorrow. This is a course, and just to give you a little bit of history, my colleague and I, in fact, our whole department at USC were laid off. This was my transition in 2011. So it's like, oh my goodness, I expect to be at USC for the next, you know, maybe to retirement even. And so now I'm laid off. And one of the departments asked us to develop a course. So we were doing it for pre-retirees, sort of what are next steps for you. And subsequently, my colleague Joyce Fernandez and I, we created this course, which is Reinventing Your Career at 40 Plus. And we've presented it at USC and UCLA to alumni, and it's been very well received. So what we've decided to do, because it's hard getting sort of those big venues together, what we've decided, and we at that one we asked Maria to come in and be the guest speaker on social media. So the three of us are getting together, and we're making a webinar series. So if you want to go to that URL, just give us your name, then we'll let you know about the webinar series, which should be starting towards the end of August. And that's just information that we would then send out to you when we have our ducks all lined up in a row.
Terrific. And we'll make sure to put some information on the website tomorrow on the archive of the show.
Great.
So I know there are a couple books here before we wrap up. Are there any books that you'd like to tell our listeners about that you have found to be helpful for anybody in a career transition?
Well, the one, What's Next? Finding Your Passion and Your Dream Job in Your 40s, 50s, and Beyond, that's by Carrie Hannon. She's with the AARP, or the book is sort of through them. And it's really giving you different stories of what people have done and how they've made transitions in their lives, you know, from one career to another. So that's a good one. And A Second Act Careers by Nancy Collamer also is sort of giving you an idea of how, what you need to do to sort of get through to your transition.
And I think you said, so, yeah, I think and Second Act Careers is the one you just mentioned. And Pearl, can you give everybody the spelling of your first and last name in case people want to Google you and find you on LinkedIn or work with you?
Yeah. So it's Pearl, P-E-A-R-L, and the last name is Hilliard, H-I-L-L-I-A-R-D.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Pearl. It's been wonderful having you on the show today. I know our listeners are going to find it invaluable. And next week, I'm having a friend, a colleague, somebody who I really respect and admire on the show, Shannon Leishner. She's a spiritual advisor, and she's also a world-renowned theta healer. She's going to be talking about where fear stops us. How does fear prevent us from landing our dream job, our dream relationship? And so Shannon and I have actually been working on a book together for a little while now about how important language is and merging spirituality and business together and how you can really have it all and be successful. So I do invite you to tune in next Monday at 4 p.m. with Shannon Leishner. And reminder that you can find us on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job and subscribe each week for free. So thank you so much. I hope everybody has a wonderful week. And Pearl, it's been delightful to have you on the show
today. It's been great. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. Terrific. Have a wonderful week.
Bye.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.